Welcome to Comics,
episode 268. This week, we talk about
Batman, Ego.
Visit us at welcometocomics.com. Listen to past episodes, see what we're reading next, send us a message, or find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. This episode is supported by listeners like you. Go to patreon.com/welcometocomics.
And now, the cast.
Hey, so have you played any of the Legion pre-event stuff?
I did the Broken Isles part.
Oh, the Broken Shores?
Yeah.
Hey, spoil for me, who dies?
Varian Wrynn.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Fuck that guy. His story's too long, and it's kind of boring. And his son is ready.
Well, so... I don't know if it was my machine or what, but after I finished it, I had to go talk to Anduin in Stormwind.
Yeah.
And Anduin's sitting on the throne, but the game like glitched somehow. So Anduin, only his shoulders and his head were sticking up out of the throne.
The boy king.
So it's pretty funny. Like, it looks like he was stuck in the throne.
Okay, good. Cause I was reading an article about what changes, and it was like, we're not going to spoil it for you, but if there's a couple of NPCs that you really like, you should go take your selfie or your screenshot with them, because they're going to die.
And
oh no, not Vol'jin. they just gave it to him.
Oh, yeah, Vol'jin does die also.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. I forgot about that.
Then I'll go snap a couple.
Well, the reason
selfies.
Is because
poor
I
Vol'jin,
watched...
he just got to be War Chief.
I watched the... whatchamacallit. I watched the cutscenes on YouTube, but the cutscene is different if you're Alliance or Horde. It's slightly different.
Okay.
In both of them, you see Varian die because he dies on the battlefield fighting Gul'dan. But then, if you're Horde, so what happens is when Varian and them are fighting Gul'dan, Sylvanas and some of her archers are doing like artillery, and in the middle of the battle they start leaving, and Varian and some Gilnean guy are like, oh no, the Scourge are a bunch of dirty liars. But if you watch the cutscene from the perspective of the Horde, you see why they're running away. It's because they're being overrun from behind. And the Alliance people can't see it.
Okay.
But in the battle on the Horde side, Vol'jin gets, like, mortally wounded, but they get him out, so he doesn't die on the battlefield like Varian does.
Okay.
Varian actually, like, sacrifices himself.
You know, I really like that setup then, because I was kind of, like... I've always liked the expansions more when the Horde and the Alliance are at war, and I've liked them less when, like, we have to join together to defeat a common enemy. Like, Wrath of the Lich King is good, but it's kind of like, we have to join together, and I'm like, oh, okay. But, like, the whole construct of this world is that they are constantly at war. So I like that there's a setup in the cutscenes for, yes, the Legion is reinvading, but they still ain't gonna like each other.
Yeah, there's definitely a big, the tension is back because of a misunderstanding, you know?
Yeah.
And so Vol'jin dies, and, he gives the, so, and then Sylvanas becomes the war chief.
Yes!
Because he thinks, Vol'jin says Sylvanas, he feels Sylvanas is the only one who can actually keep the Horde together.
Yes, the Banshee Queen. I love Sylvanas so much.
Yeah, me too. Sylvanas is one of my favorite characters from World of Warcraft.
I've always thought she was badass, and that's so much better. And I always like that, oh, that gives such good story stuff too, because she's always been on like the outside of the Horde.
Yeah.
Like on the edge. They've never trusted her. None of the other war chiefs have really fully trusted her, and none of the other leaders fully trust her, because the only way she can increase her population is to raise the dead. So she has to kill people.
Well, I mean, the whole population of Undercity is remnants of the Scourge, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean...
The whole reason they attacked Gilneas, is because they found a way to get there, and they wanted... They wanted to increase their ranks, so they introduced the Scourge to Gilneas, hoping that some of them would have the will of the Forsaken and join Sylvanas' people. That's the whole reason the Gilneans even bothered to escape. So I love that, like, that's a thing that she's done. Like, the only reason she attacks people is to survive her people. So I love that now she's the war chief. That's gonna be great. Like, oh, none of you trust me? Fuck you, I'm the leader.
Well, like some of the other leaders of the Horde, they don't openly oppose her, because I think they want to honor Vol'jin. Mm-hmm. So,
man, poor Vol'jin for like one expansion.
Yeah, he was war chief for like a minute.
Well, I guess Garrosh was war chief for one expansion.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
But we knew Garrosh was a dick from the beginning. Everybody loved Vol'jin, and that's why Vol'jin became war chief. And now it's like, man, he didn't want it in the first place.
Yeah.
And here he is dying for it. Oh well. Okay. I'll have to go take some selfies.
Broken the Isles, there's a part where there's enough time for you to take a selfie with Gul'dan if you're fast enough.
Okay. So
it's like as a group, like you do it with a bunch of other players. And when there's a part where Gul'dan like comes out of this portal and you can run up to him and to do a selfie with him while the like conversation's going on. So if you want a selfie with Gul'dan, you can do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I care less about Gul'dan. I really want to... I'm going to miss Vol'jin. I liked him a lot, too. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Who's going to lead the trolls, then?
I don't know.
That'll be interesting. Because they are, like, they're the second biggest faction in the Horde.
Yep.
All right.
Gnome hunters are a thing, too.
Yeah. Yeah, we talked about this. Like, I when I made my hunter, if I could have rolled a gnome, I would have rolled a gnome. But now, I don't want to redo it. I don't want to. Because I made a headcanon for my hunter, and I don't want to get rid of her.
Yeah, I really like my hunter, so.
Yeah.
So I don't want to mess with him. He looks cool. Like, his transmog would not look as cool on a gnome.
Yeah, same thing with me too, yeah. Gnomes are harder to transmog, I think. Because it's all shoulders and weapon and helmet.
I was thinking about using my level 100 boost to make a gnome hunter, and I thought, no, that's just a waste.
Yeah, no, you already have a hunter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really like the hunter.
I might use it to make a second druid.
And honestly, the racial pet is not that cool, I don't think.
Oh, which one is it?
It's like a robotic mechanical rabbit. See, my hunter's got a fucking triceratops as his pet.
Mine's got a fucking chimera that breathes ice breath named Adele because it's rolling in the deeps.
My triceratops is named Hornysaurus. So.
Yeah, you have a whole dinosaur-themed hunter. That's true. I remember that. Yeah, that's awesome.
But he's the only dinosaur I carry around regularly because he's my tanking. He's my tanking pet.
Mm-hmm. And he's cool.
And I have like a spectral, like ghost wolf thing, and then I also have a white fell hound.
Do you have the Triceratops mount?
No.
Oh, you got to farm the shit out of that island.
Well,
for that guy.
When I was like farming it, I kept there were other players like standing around waiting for the NPC to pop up, And so I would just end up getting into fights with other people from the opposing faction.
Fucking PvP realm, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, hey, you want to talk about this week's comic?
Yeah, probably we should.
Yeah, before it gets too late.
This week's comic.
This week we read Batman Ego. This is the last in our series of our tribute to Darwin Cook. But this is not the last Darwin Cook comic. There's tons and tons of other great ones. And I'm pretty sure this one's going to get highly rated. The last three were highly rated. So if you've enjoyed Darwin Cook at all, I encourage you highly to go and seek out more of his work. He's a great creator. And he is already missed. And it will only get worse as time goes by, because I'll never get to see these magnificent jawlines again. It's kind of a joke, but I mean, it's a signature of his art. And like I was saying, last week, like, the square jaw is what we identify as heroic, and something about the way everybody he draws looks heroic. Unless they're a fucking, like, weasel or rat or something, but like, everybody just looks so Silver Age and cool and rat-packy. Well, there's this vibe all throughout his art that I love.
If you really are into strong jawlines, just go back and read New Frontier again.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So, this comic, this is really interesting, because did you get the trade? Did you pick it up, or how did you read this?
I bought it. I got it on Comixology.
Did that have the foreword in it that Darwin Cook wrote?
Yes.
And did you read it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so apparently, like, it makes sense that he loves Batman, because the way the vibe of his art is very noirish, and Batman is very noirish, and I like the idea. He was talking about, you know, what if Batman and Bruce Wayne could have an open, candid conversation about the way they react in each other's bodies,
mm-hmm.
And it's really cool to see it play out. And this comic did such an amazing job of keeping my attention and making me turn the pages so quickly, and there's, like, no action. It's just a dude and his alter ego talking in a cave. That's literally all this comic is, but it had my attention wrapped, like, the entire time.
So, yeah, I blazed through this really fast, because it's definitely a fast-paced page-turner. But after I read through it initially, I thought, you know, this doesn't, like, the way that the ideas of the Batman versus Bruce Wayne personalities are, how they're different people in one body, to me, that's not really, like, it's not really anything new. But then later, when I was thinking about it, I realized that what's interesting about this comic is not necessarily just the conversation between Batman and Bruce Wayne, but also the way that the story is framed.
Mm-hmm.
I thought was very interesting, because it's not really something that, at least I never really thought about it too much. The fact that, you know, there are repercussions for the people that are indirect repercussions for the people who are related to the criminals that Batman puts away. And I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, when that guy jumped off the bridge, it fucking slayed me.
Well, then Batman saves him, right?
Yeah.
And then he gets pissed off at Batman and shoots himself in the head.
The whole scene fucking slayed me. And then to see him, like, the other thing that we get with this comic is we never see that side of Batman, right?
Mm-hmm.
As he's charging home after this moment. And we don't ever see him break down the way he breaks down after this. And it's fantastic, because this character, I mean, so often when we see Batman, he's this, I don't know, like, a good guy version of Darth Vader, almost, you know? He's just this menacing, unstoppable force, almost, of darkness, but for justice. And you never see this part of this character, but it makes perfect sense that it's there. He's here to save families and to save children. That's why he's like that's why he got into this. He wants to make Gotham a safe place for families, and here, because of his actions, a family is utterly destroyed.
Yeah, I mean,
how could that not tear him apart? No matter how hardened of a badass he is, how could that not tear him apart?
And I think somebody could attempt to make the argument that this criminal, what was his name?
Something Snibs? Snubs?
Yeah. Yeah, Snibs. I remember that part. I remember his first name. But, you know, one could say that he brought it upon himself by being involved with people like the Joker. But then at the same time,
gotta get a dollar.
This comic also makes the point that about how Joker is kind of a creation of Batman, an indirect creation of Batman, right? I mean, we see Red Hood falling into the vat at Ace Chemicals again, mm-hmm. Which is something that was from The Killing Joke, right? Originally,
I think so. Yes.
Or I remember it being that scene playing out in The Killing Joke.
Yeah, that's in The Killing Joke. That's also in the Tim Burton Batman movie.
Yeah. It's actually in Suicide Squad a little bit too. Okay. By the way.
Yeah. So that's more or less the current considered canon origin for Joker, even though there is no definitive canon origin for Joker.
Yeah. Well, and so, you know, and you could keep going back to these different steps and say, okay, this is Snibs' fault. Well, this is Joker's fault. Well, this is Batman's fault. You know, and you could say, okay, well, if Bruce Wayne's parents were never killed, then there would never be a Joker. So it's that guy's fault. Was it Joe Chill?
Yeah.
But the none of that is useful.
None of that gets that family back.
It doesn't help the family, right? And the fact that this guy killed his own family to
save them from what Joker was going to do to them. And that's terrifying on its own level.
Yeah. Because you can only imagine, well, you don't really have to imagine the level of suffering that Joker would bring on people, you know?
Yeah. Go read Killing Joke.
Yeah.
To see what he does to families, to fuck with them.
So, yeah, initially I thought the comic was well put together and stuff. But I wasn't, that blown away by it. But then as I thought about it more, I realized that what it was doing different and what was setting it apart. So,
yeah,
I changed my mind.
Yeah, and the other thing that I really valued that was different in this from other, so often you hear, like, oh, The real personality is Batman and Bruce Wayne is the mask. Like, you hear that all the time. Like, Batman wears a mask, but that's the real person. Which, okay, sure. I can see that to a point, because that's the driving force of his life, right, is Batman. Like, that is what he is as a person. That's how he's defining himself. That's what he lives for, is to be Batman. But he cannot be wholly consumed by that, or else he would be more than he is. He would be like what we see in Kingdom Come, when he's older, but he has like an army of bat sentries that have the city on complete lockdown, or he has the OMAX, you know? we would see him controlling Gotham to the extreme, but usually we don't, because he understands that he cannot let that completely control him. It's part of his life, but it's not all of him. And I like that in this comic, with Batman as a persona completely separated from Bruce Wayne, Bruce Wayne is tempted for a minute when Batman says, hey, you know, we could have an amicable split. You know, I can do this at night, and in the daytime, you can go and booze and buy hotels and seduce women and have a great fucking time as Bruce Wayne. And then at night, I will do what needs to fucking get done. And if you truly buy that Batman is the real person and Bruce Wayne is the mask, then that offer is worthless. But in this comic, he considers it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's even... Obviously, I think the Bruce Wayne adds humanity to the side of Bruce Wayne that is Batman and consumed by this pursuit of justice, like mm-hmm. you said, with Kingdom Come and stuff. I think from a practical point of view, Bruce Wayne is, without Bruce Wayne, Batman wouldn't have all his gadgets and stuff, right?
Yeah.
But I think if to see a similar character who is in fact consumed by their pursuit of justice, you can look at like Rorschach from Watchmen, you know? He is Rorschach, you know, completely. When he's in the jail and they take his mask, or when he gets arrested initially in the Watchmen comic, he's mad because the police have taken his mask off, right? And he says, no, you've taken my face, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he is a person who has, I think, only maintained, he doesn't feel the need to maintain his more human identity, right?
Yeah.
He is Rorschach 24/7.
Yeah.
And Batman, or Bruce Wayne is not, because there are practical reasons and emotional reasons to keep Bruce Wayne around. Not just keep Bruce Wayne around, but to be Bruce Wayne to some degree, even when he does have the mask on. I mean, I think my favorite example of that is the episode of, I think it's Justice League Unlimited, or maybe it's Justice League, but the one where the Justice League is fighting the Royal Flush Gang, mm-hmm. and Amanda Waller sends Batman in to talk to Ace. Amanda sends Batman in to kill Ace. And Ace is
Oh, the little girl version.
The teenage girl, yeah.
Yeah.
And instead of killing her, Batman...
Yeah, he sits down and talks with her.
Yeah, he talks to her, and she passes away on her own because her powers were, like, overwhelming her. But he doesn't kill her because... I don't think it's because of his no-killing rule. Because I think in the right circumstances, Batman would kill if he really felt there was no other way out of the situation. But he knows that that is completely unnecessary in that situation. And so this human side of the Batman Bruce Wayne entity solves the problem in a very human way. Right. And I think if the Batman persona that we see in this comic were in that same situation, he probably would have just done what Amanda Waller said and killed Ace.
Yeah. This Batman would have just done it. Like, cause who knows? Talking might work, might not, but I know what will work is fucking killing a little girl. mm-hmm. And he would have done it. But
because he would have been like, okay, we'll just get it done and we can move on to the next.
Yeah, we can maximize justice.
Yeah.
And I think Bruce Wayne keeps Bruce Wayne around. Batman keeps Bruce Wayne around, even just for a utilitarian in the ethical sense point of view. Cause Bruce, you could argue Bruce has a much greater capacity for good in the world than Batman with his wealth and power and his company. And we see glimpses of that sometimes. There's a comic I remember where you see Bruce walking around Wayne Enterprises and he befriends the mailboy, and talks to him once or twice. And the mailboy's like, oh yeah, I'm trying to go to school, but I can't really afford it. So I'm working here and it's affecting my studies and this and that. And then like the next page, Bruce Wayne gives him a full ride scholarship. And mm-hmm. who knows what that kid goes and does, right? But,
yeah.
And that's a micro version, but on a macro version, I remember, I think it was an episode of Batman animated series. No, it was Superman the animated series. Lex Luthor's trying to build a rocket. And Batman knows that rocket is going to be used to fuck up Superman. So Batman goes to Lex. Bruce goes to Lex and Bruce says, hey, LexCorp, Wayne Enterprises would like to partner with you on this project. And Wayne Enterprises proceeds to just completely fuck the project up left and right.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing is an utter failure. And he's able to defeat Lex Luthor and save Superman using money and not having to put the costume on even once. And, like, that is such a capacity for good as Bruce Wayne. So I think it's not something you can get rid of. I think even this Batman is missing that point, by wanting to have a completely separate skit. Like, I think that would have been the better argument for a schism. Like, look, you can go out there and you can completely and wholly focus on doing good in the world as Bruce Wayne using your company. Cause I'm certain he can't give full devotion to that if he's Batman every night. He just can't.
Yeah, I mean, he's got to sleep sometimes.
Right? Yeah, he somewhere in there, in his office.
Yeah.
Which just rolls right into the personality that helps him maintain his cover. So yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of reasons to keep Bruce around, but I love that. I love that the temptation of being a playboy for reals actually hits home. Because, I mean, you can do that for pretend all you want, but man, it'd be nice, right?
Well, I think even more than that, I think there's the drive to have a family and stuff, too.
Yeah, because we see the women rejecting him over and over, and the problems that it's causing in his life to be Batman. And those problems would be gone, presumably.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, he could focus on other things, you know? He could be a parent or be more involved in Wayne Enterprises and, you know, like you said, arguably he could do a lot of good in that role, but he does have the drive to be Batman also.
And but that's such a trick that he could, that's why I like this too, is that the Batman that we see in this, the embodiment of fear that lives inside Bruce Wayne, God, he's learned so much from the Joker because he is such a dick and a trickster. Cause that's the idea, right? Like, you could be Bruce Wayne and you could go off and you could have a family that you can't have now because you're constantly letting these women down or just whatever. And they can't be with you. And you could have that, Bruce. You could. But that's fucking bullshit. And we all know it. Cause if this deal gets taken, his body is still going out at night. But with less protection and less leavening. Just in the purest form, and more likely that he will get in trouble, and whatever family tries to build will be damaged. And, like, there's just, it goes to show that there is no incarnation of this character that can ever have that. And to even offer it is so fucked up. So fucked up. we also talked about how, the comic brought up a point about how back in the old days, in the purest form, it was just them fighting bad guys together. And then Bruce had to go off and want to be a celebrity with the fucking spotlight.
Yeah.
I was like, that's a dick move. He didn't build the spotlight. Or did he? I don't remember. I think sometimes Gordon builds it out of necessity, and I think sometimes he gives it to them.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Yeah. I mean, for this comic, that kind of matters, but I guess not. Because in this, the argument is that it's a matter of escalation.
And that, well, the thing, too,
when they were working on a street level, it was fine, but then it escalated, and that's where the problem started.
Well, I think the who created the bat signal is irrelevant here, because, I mean, there has to be some sort of approval from Batman
to right? show up when it gets lit. Yeah.
Yeah, because he could, if Batman was not okay with the bat signal, he could just ignore it, right?
Yeah.
But it also helps, you know, if you're a criminal and you think, I'm gonna go rob this liquor store, and then you go outside and you see the bat signal in the sky, you think, maybe it's not a great idea to do this tonight.
maybe not today. Oh man, I would light that shit up every night.
If I was Commissioner Gordon, I would just have it on, even if I knew Batman wasn't around.
I would have it on in the daytime. Just build it into the budget for 24/7 bat signal. And put up on the building next door, put up a big black billboard and just project it onto that at all times. Comic, I think, I mean, you're right. If you are somebody who's really familiar with the Batman character, not even really familiar, but if you just kind of run into Batman a lot, you're used to so many of his different permutations, but this is such a great, and this is why I think it's good for the show that we're trying to do now. This is such a great introduction to Batman as a character and the deeper parts of what it means to be Batman. Cause a lot of people watch Justice League or the Batman the Animated Series and they won't catch a couple episodes, but I don't think most people don't think about the deeper parts of a character. And this launches that thought process. Like, my wife has watched Justice League and a little bit of Justice League Unlimited, and she's seen a couple episodes of the animated series, but I don't think she thinks about Batman as a character on this level. And this is a great way to make those arguments about this character much more tangible. I think in the same way that All-Star Superman does for Superman, but this is more overt and so much more tangible of a way to go about talking about Batman.
Yeah. Well, and I think that is part of the whole thing about people not really thinking deeply about comic characters is I think that's part of the problem with comics being written off as a, like, childish form of media or something that's not worth, as much, as much societal, like...
It doesn't have the same value.
Yeah, it's not as valuable as, like, capital L literature. But the thing is, I think because there is this colorful and, heroic vibe to... Or, not heroic, but, there's bright colors and it's kind of... It can be... very simple on the surface, that it's disregarded. And it's the fact that these characters have been around for such a long time and so many different people have worked on them, these creators have had the time to think deeply about these characters and use the history to paint this interesting picture of these, characters that could be one dimensional. Because there are lots of heroes out in the media ether that are very one-dimensional. I mean, look at a character like He-Man, right? He-Man, I loved He-Man when I was a kid. But the thing is, he was created to sell toys, and he's very one-dimensional. But he's a superhero, just like Superman, right? So
yeah.
I mean, they serve the same purpose, right? They're supposed to go fight the bad guys and save the day. Yeah,
from the outside, they look the same.
Right, but Superman is a much deeper character than He-Man, by orders of magnitude.
Yeah.
But to the, to the person that doesn't really understand or maybe isn't as interested because they have these preconceptions about comics, they might equate Superman to He-Man.
Yeah, and I think that's where those arguments of I'm not really interested in Superman, I don't like Superman comics because he's too all-powerful. And it's like, well, but what are you reading it for then? Just the fights? Like, that is a foundational piece of Superman as a character, is that he is all-powerful and that he is almost godlike. And think about all of the stories and questions you can ask knowing that. and build a story from there. And
well, it's like
it doesn't make the stories worthless. It just makes them different.
Part of the conflict within Superman is the fact that he can do literally anything, and he chooses not to. And the reasons why he chooses not to be that person is what makes him interesting. I mean, there are comics that explore that, just like this comic explores a different part of Batman. You know, comics like Superman Red Sun, Superman is indoctrinated by communism, but in the end, he, he, he uses his all-powerfulness to create this utopia in the end, right? And, but it's not all happiness and sunshine, right?
Yeah, because in the end, Lex Luthor tells him, look, you have this city in a bottle that you could not figure out how to maximize and turn life size, and you have basically turned the Earth into Kandor. Yeah. And done that to try and, like, I mean, he does it very much more succinctly, but he says, you've turned this planet into Kandor in an attempt to make up for what happened to those people, and you instead have utterly failed both. Mm-hmm. And everything you think you have done, you've just continually fucked up. And then he quits. Cause mm-hmm. Lex is right. And that's a story you can only tell if you start from him being all powerful.
Right.
Or sometimes he's a complete dick, like in Power of Ion. Where he's like, sometimes we gotta let the little people do things for themselves.
Yeah.
They gotta feel like they're important. You asshole.
Well, that's kind of what Lex wants, though, right? He wants people to, in Lex's purest dream is... He doesn't want humanity to have to live in the shadow of Superman.
Yeah.
Because he thinks that Superman is going to use his near omnipotence to like not subjugate but minimize humanity.
Mm-hmm. And the idea that it's the whole idea of invention with a safety net, like, you know, you only have the confidence to do things so brave because you know Superman will be there if you fail. Like, you have to, conversely, people who are ballsy enough to do it without the safety net should be rewarded. The idea of, like, yes, it's fine, we all have the ability to fail because if we fall out of a window, Superman will be there to save us. But give it purpose yourself, I think, is what Lex Luthor wants people to do.
And see, the problem I have, I think Lex has such a huge ego that he can't see that there are people who are out in the world doing just that, what he wants humanity to do. I mean, there's characters like Batman, you know, he is just a regular person who is extremely smart and wealthy. You know, that helps a lot too, but he is just a man.
Mm-hmm.
He's an extremely well-trained man, but he is just a regular person, and he goes toe to toe with Superman on a regular basis, or even minor characters like Ted Kord. He goes out there and puts his life on the line, and he's even less equipped to do it than Batman is.
Yeah,
but he has the drive and the ingenuity to go out and do something special, and so he does it. And he is accepted by people like Superman.
Because he's got the cojones.
Yeah, because Superman understands and appreciates that there are humans out there who are trying to do the same thing that he is. Put themselves out there for the betterment of everybody else.
Oh, God, there's one scene that I love, and I cannot for life remember where it is. But there's a... There's a policeman patrolling Central Park, or some version of it, and he stumbles upon Batman and Superman, and he's like, oh, I saw somebody over here in the shadows, and I was wondering if it was something nefarious was going on. He says, but I'm glad we have you two heroes here. And Superman's like, you mean us three? I was like, you cheeky? Oh, that's great, Superman.
Yeah.
Because, like, and Superman recognizes that, yeah, that guy cannot do anything a fraction of what Superman can do, but that guy's out there putting his life on the line to protect people, and that is heroism just as much as anything else. And I think, to tie it back into this comic, is that that's not what this Batman is after. This Batman is not after anything heroic, and he's out there to maximize justice and the utilitarian version of saving the maximum number of lives possible, which is not heroic. His fundamental argument is, look at all of the people that you can consider yourself to have killed because you never killed the Joker. Because you know when you put him away, he's going to get back out. You know he will. So every time he gets back out, and he kills somebody, that is on us. And, I mean, you could make that argument, but there's fallacies all up inside and down in there.
Yeah.
They're like, it is not Batman's fault that he gets back out. It is not. It is not Batman's fault what he does when he gets back out. Batman, for his part, believes in the system, and if he does not have that belief, then he cannot fundamentally be Batman. And
right.
this fear incarnation of Batman that is in this comic is abdicating that they become monsters. and you cannot have this heroism that we've been talking about if he takes this offer. Any part of this offer.
Yeah, Batman as we know it would be gone, and he'd turn into somebody like, I don't know, he'd be an anti-hero. He'd be like the Punisher, right? Yeah. I mean, the Punisher is exactly that. He maximizes the punishment. He doesn't believe in the system.
No.
That's the fundamental difference between those two characters, right? Is that Punisher does not believe that the system works, and so he goes outside the system. Batman goes outside the system to a degree, but he leaves the punishment of the criminals to the justice system. Batman's goal is to bring these people in and then let the courts decide their ultimate fate, right?
Yeah, and I phrased it that way originally, but I'm not even sure Batman believes that the system works, but I think he at the very least believes that he needs them to try. Like, eventually, yeah. They have to get it right. Eventually. And, I mean, that's the one thing I wish we got here, is his explanation of why he keeps doing it. Because we just see him buried under that mound of skulls, and then we move on to the next topic. And it's kind of considered that fear incarnation of Batman wins this argument, but I'm not so sure. Just because, I mean, you have to, right? I mean, you have to... Otherwise, you'd become that guy either way. You know, if you don't put some faith in the system, then you become this Batman at least a little bit more. And I think that's what this Bruce Wayne is trying to constantly fight off, is becoming this pure Batman.
Yeah.
Well, do you want to rate this?
Sure. Okay. We went on a, that was a deep cut of a tangent there. But I think, but that's kind of what we're trying to do with the podcast, right? Is talk about the value of comics and try to help people find the gems out there.
Yeah, and this is definitely a gem. I think,
because I mean, you can walk into a comic book store and there is literally walls of comics.
Yes.
And it can be daunting. I mean, if you go into a comic book shop, ask the person behind the counter, because if a person works in a comic book store, they are a comic book fan and they will help you out.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can just listen to what Andy and I say.
Yeah.
And Jen.
Go look at our 267 previous episodes, and
yeah,
there'll be good stuff in there. And it might not be what tickles your fancy, but if you have an idea of a character that you like, go ahead and check out. I mean, we try to read only the good stuff, but we have read Batman Odyssey, so...
We read Spawn.
God. Yes, we did.
I mean, we didn't like Spawn, but...
Some
He's been
do.
Around for a long time, and so if you think that Spawn looks cool, don't take our word for it.
Yeah.
Go check it out.
Yeah, go read it your damn self, because I am going to again. And actually, if you want a copy, if you really want to read Spawn, let me know, because I still have my copy, and I cannot for the life of me get rid of it, and I will mail it to you, dear listener. If you want a free copy of Spawn, I will mail that shit to you tomorrow. I have Volume 2 as well. I bought them both together because they were on sale. And I haven't touched Volume 2. I have no desire to read it, but if you do, I'll mail it to you too.
I think I mentioned this in the Spawn episode, which was like our second episode or something, so I'll just mention it again. The only Spawn comic I owned was a reprinting of the first issue that came with a Spawn action figure that somebody bought for me as a kid. And that was a cool action figure. But
I mean, the character design and the concept is cool. But that comic was not.
Yeah. Anyways.
Yeah, we were rating this. Yeah, I'm gonna give this a 4. I feel like I feel like part of the problem with reading this comic for you and me, David, is that we are very familiar with Batman as a character, Batman as a genre, and Batman as a mythos. So for you and I, this feels like review. It's like when I watch Cosmos. I have an associate's degree in astrophysics, and when I watch Cosmos, I'm like, this is all review. But
yeah,
it's enthralling to watch, and this is enthralling to read, because this hits those highlights, and it does it in such a great way. And it reminds me of one of my friends is a huge sports movie fan, and he had never seen Rudy, so I showed him Rudy, and he was like, this was okay. It's just all of the tropes of every movie. Like, this is just all this, but I'm like, this is where half of them started. And this is this is the purest, best incarnation of all of those things that you now see as trite. And I feel like this comic is an incredibly good distillation of the struggle that is Batman versus Bruce Wayne. That's so fundamental to these characters. I mean, this character is one character, and I think as much as people try to say, oh, the real character is Batman, the real character is Bruce Wayne, what we come to here is that they are inseparable, and if you try to make that argument, either way, you're going to fail, because they are one person, and they could not exist without the other. They would be wholly different entities, and this does a great job of introducing you to that concept of looking at a character from a deeper perspective, which then will rebound you into other conversations, like with what happened to us. We just bounced merrily right into Superman from here.
Yeah.
And I think you can do the same of so many other characters. And man, we gotta do more one. We gotta have a discussion like this about Wonder Woman too. We gotta have discussions about character like this all the time, because this was a good discussion about Batman.
I don't think we've done a Wonder Woman arc.
I don't think we have.
We need to put that on the list.
Yeah, we do. We'll put that on the list. But yeah, I'm gonna give this a 4, and I think if I wasn't such an avid comic fan, this would be a 5, but it feels like review, so it loses a little bit for me. But like I said, I read through it really fast, really ravenously, and really enjoyed it. 4.
Yeah, I'm gonna give it, I'm also gonna agree with Andy and give it a 4. Like Andy said, it does feel like a review in some ways, and that was my initial reaction to the comic. But the way that the interaction between the two personas is framed is something I had never really thought about, or something I don't recall seeing in another Batman comic or TV show or something. So from that perspective, it was really cool. And then also, you know, this is a great showcase of Darwin Cook's writing prowess and his art style. I really do like this style of Batman. So even though my initial reaction was that I felt kind of, you know, I realized it was a good comic, but I didn't feel like super strong about it. In retrospect, I think this is a good place for a new person to see another side of Batman, or not another side, but get a deeper understanding of Batman.
Mm.
So, yeah, this is definitely 4. It's a good comic. It's really, really good.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And if you picked up the trade, it comes with a bunch of other smaller stories, and, definitely read those too. They're all really good.
Yeah. I haven't read them yet, but I want to check them out.
Yeah, and I really appreciate what Darwin Cook wrote at the end of his. So he does, if you buy this trade paperback in the front, he does an intro and he talks about his experience with Batman, and then he goes into a little bit to talk about each of the stories, and then at the end he has a paragraph where he recapped, and in the end he's like, "Man, you know, I'm so glad I got a chance to do these, but I never want to do Batman again, because as much as I love the character, he is an intense." He's an intense person, and you cannot write a Batman book without bringing your A game constantly. He is exhausting to write and exhausting to draw, probably because he is such a huge, huge figure in our culture, and he is intense. Like, I can't imagine a lazy Batman story. You can write a lazy Starfire story. It's still got TNA and laser blasts. And, you know, that's cool. You can write a lazy one, and it'll work out all right. But you cannot write a lazy Batman story and have it work out any amount of mediocre. You just can't. Yeah. So definitely pick up the trade, read all of it, even the intro. It's all good stuff. All right. So that's it for our Darwin Cook tribute series. Next week, we're going to start a Netflix series. So Netflix is doing their Iron Fist series, and they're going to do their Power Man, their Luke Cage series, and then they're going to do a Defenders series. So we're going to do 4 episodes talking about the comic book roots of these shows. So next week, we're going to start with Iron Fist. We're going to read The Immortal Iron Fist, The Last Iron Fist Story. This is a trade written by Matt Fraction, Dave Brubaker, and David Aja. Fraction and Aja are the team that did the awesome reboot of Hawkeye. And this is a really good reboot of Danny Rand as a character and Iron Fist, and actually crafts a whole new legacy origin for the character that does a really good job of introducing him all over again. After that, we're going to read Luke Cage. We're going to do The Essential Luke Cage, Power Man, Volume 2. So The Essentials are like these giant collections that are black and white. We're going to do Volume 2 because the end of Volume 2 is when Luke Cage makes friends with Iron Fist, which is one of the best moments in comics because that is the second best bromance in all of fiction, right behind, I would say, Booster Gold and Blue Beetle. So, if I'm going to have my readers buy any trade, it's going to be Volume 2 where those two meet. And then after that it gets murky, right? Because Netflix is doing Iron Fist and they're doing Luke Cage and then they're doing Defenders. But there is no comic book analog for the Defenders team that Netflix is putting together. Because the Defenders team in the comic is way different in the comic book universe. The closest team that actually exists in the comics is Heroes for Hire. But even then, none of them are really a good fit. So instead, we're going to read Shadowland, which is not about this team at all, but has a lot of these players, has Daredevil. Daredevil has taken over the hand, this secret society of ninjas, and he's going to use them to become a more hardcore hero for Hell's Kitchen. But he's kind of making himself evil doing it. So a bunch of other heroes step in to stop him. And this is not a critically acclaimed comic, but it's the closest we could come to a comic that includes all these characters.
Yeah.
So it's written by Andy Diggle. It collects the first, the trade collects the 5 issues of Shadowland, issue 1 to 5. And then after that, we're going to read Defenders. just to show everyone how different it is. We're going to read Defenders Indefensible. This is not the most iconic run of this team, but it is done by JM Dumatase and Keith Giffen, which are an awesome creative team. I love them so much. They are fantastic, and I cannot wait to read their run of Defenders. Seriously, this is nothing at all like what the show is going to be. It's like Silver Surfer and Hulk and Doctor Strange. It is a totally different power level, totally different everything.
There's a fourth person on the team that I can't remember who it is.
Is it Thing? I want to say it's
Thing. No, it's not Thing. I think it's somebody really like D-list.
Okay, let me look at the cover. Namor.
Namor. Yeah, okay.
It's Namor. A B-list.
Yeah, he's not D-list. I was thinking of somebody like Nighthawk or
or like a Moon Knight.
I don't know. Now even Moon Knight's higher on my. Anyways.
Who would be D-list? Alright. I don't know Marvel.
This would be the D-list. Defenders lineup has
Stiltman.
The Stiltman's a villain.
Yeah, I know, but he could reform. I don't know. I'm trying to think of the most lame person in Marvel.
Man.
Anyway, yeah. The last one is gonna be Defenders Indefensible. Keith Given and Dematase. Mm-hmm. Keith Given and Dematase.
Is this the 2005 one?
Yes.
Okay. Because not only is it JM DeMatteis and Keith Giffen, it's Kevin also Maguire. Kevin Maguire.
Yeah. this is the Justice League international team.
Yeah, we have to read
the in comics they are known as the Terrible Trio, because they're fantastic. Yeah, I'm really, really looking forward to this, even though it has nothing to do with what we've been doing. this has nothing to do with the Netflix shows that we're going to talk about.
My favorite piece of original comic book artist art that I ever have spent money on is the Kevin Maguire portrait of Blue Beetle that I bought. It's amazing.
It is.
It's beautiful.
It is.
Like, it's not only is it like quality art, but it has like the look on Ted Kord's face in it is amazing. I love it so much. Anyways.
Yeah. No, I am supremely jealous of that original art, and I really want myself to own some original Kevin Maguire, but gotta get that paper.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's it for this week. Next week, the Immortal Iron Fist, the Last Iron Fist story, Matt Fraction, David Brubaker, David Aja. If you didn't catch all of that, go to our website, welcometocomics.com. On the left, click on where it says Future Shows. We'll have links to all this stuff. Just click on the little button that says Amazon, the link that says Amazon. It'll take you straight to the trade that we're going to be reading for the show. So there's no confusion at all. And if you are confused, there's a little thing on the left that says Contact. Send us a message. That's cool, too. Let us know what's going on. Say hey. Yeah. All right. That's it for this week. Until next week, everybody. Goodbye.